All right, it's running. We have been talking about performance appraisal, correct? Yes. We've been talking about performance appraisal, and I have yet to show you. Did I show you any of the methods or just one of them? One. I showed you one methodology for doing performance appraisal. Remind me, this class blends in with my other class. What?
The GR.
Yeah, graphic rating scale. So I talked to you about the graphic rating scale and the fact that it's probably the most used performance appraisals formats, and you should be sort of prepared to see it. But understand that, of course, there's many, many versions of that kind of format. But in general, what we're looking at is the important major responsibilities of a job and graded against the idea of a scale of 1 to 5 or often to never or whatever. And it could indeed be used across the measuring across the top, could be in terms of level of performance of that major responsibility, which would coincide with the standards, perhaps set numerical standards that were set for that particular behavior in the interpretation of the job analysis. So if it said that it's important that the employee file a monthly budget, and that is considered to be at a 7 or 8, then you could use 1 through 10 across the top of your performance appraisal graphic rating scale. However works best for you. But the idea to be always to create a performance appraisal scale that links the employee's performance as accurately as possible to the long-term goals of the organization, such that the employee is contributing at the level necessary for goals to be achieved. Okay. Pretty straightforward. The graphic rating scale, to me, while being widely used, is not as convenient or as edifying to use as is this next one, which is goes by the soubrette, the nickname that will perk up everyone's ears because it's known as BARS, B-A-R-S. BARS in this case stands for behaviorally anchored rating scales, which I haven't talked to you about yet, have I? Behaviorally anchored rating scales. I like them. You'll see why in a minute. I think they're easy to use, and they set clear goals for employees to achieve on their own. I mentioned to you before that employees, by and large, enjoy using performance appraisal results that are numerically based. They want numerically based so that they can set their own personal goals and know how to judge their own performance vis-a-vis the standards that they're going to be measured against. So if you say they're at a certain level, a 5, and they need to get to a 7, they know to increase, particularly if that 7 and the 5 are labeled, you know, clearly as to what's lacking in their performance, let's say. And I'll show you what I mean. So the behavior anchored rating scales, behavior anchored please note that it does not say behaviorally anchored ranking scale, because you remember ranking means that they compare one employee to another, right, instead of to the actual job standards. So you may be able to rate Curly as being the most humorous of the three stooges and Shemp as being a total moron, but it doesn't do much in terms of goal achievement, right? It could be that neither of them are really very funny compared to like me, right? We all together on that. So what we want is not comparison to employees, but comparison to standards. That's called rating, and that's why rating's in here rather than ranking. All right, So with the behavioral anchored rating scale, we have this. We have a sheet of paper. Oh, look at this rendering here. Can you tell? All the well-known professional artists in my family tree going back over the centuries. Isn't it fantastic how I can do that? Each one of these represents a major responsibility. All right, each one is a major responsibility required of the job. And that major responsibility is written here. Turns in office budget every month. We've already mentioned that. Turns in office budget every month. Now we come to the part that makes it easier to use, and that is that you have a pictorial tree, something along this line. And these boxes are known as critical incidents. Critical incidents. A critical incident is, in this case, the way that this major responsibility can be performed. From not very good here to just the way it should be done up here. And the standard may be that they achieve this level, whatever the standard might be for goal achievement. How important is turning in an office budget? In other words, to goal achievement, whatever. So each one of these critical incidents shows a way that doing the office budget could be turned in. So at the very top here, it might read, there's an explosion of a box. This becomes that. A critical incident for, at the top would be budget turned in on time, good detail, easy to read, use, I'll put, and well organized. And neat. Right, like my handwriting. So budget turned in on time, good detail, easy to use, well organized, and neat. That might be the top listing. Down here at the bottom, it's basically all negative, right? It's turned in late, there's not much detail, it's difficult to use because it's a mess and it's not well organized, etc. So here, down here, this one is going to be all negatives to the this one here. So, bad. So, now, we would be able to see these critical incidents as possible ways in which this major responsibility was carried out. Okay, so now the person that we're going to do a performance appraisal of comes in to talk to us. We have been reading over our own notes, we're looking over the notes about this, the employee over last 6 months. Because we've been keeping some at least notes, some at least minimal notes on the employee and their major responsibilities. So, the person comes in. We're sitting behind the big desk. They're standing in front of it or sitting in a chair ready to listen to what we have to say. We organize our thinking and our presentation in a way that's constructive to the employee, figuring that it's going to be useful to them if we do it constructively and not useful if we attack them and tell them that they're a mess. So we tried to put this forward, certainly in a mud sandwich formation, as we go through this discussion. So each one of these being a increasingly positive review up here, we've seen this employee that we're talking to now came in here, X. And in that box, it says that they were reasonably neat, always on time, pretty useful, and somewhat well-organized, etc. So you tell the employee, they finished, this is box 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever. So you tell them that they're in 3. Okay. And we go over why they're in 3 and not 4 or 5, and why they're not in 2 and 1. So we give them a concrete picture of why this particular major responsibility, the standard of which is set at 4, has not been achieved. What we need is, from these notes then, actual behavioral events that we can remind the employee about that set them into this lower categorization. Everybody follow me? And this way, the employee has a crystal view, a crystal clear view of what they've done that needs improvement on this particular component of their performance appraisal. And why do we want to take the time to do this? Why do we want to encourage the employee to do this? Because we have decided that this point here is crucial for achieving our goals for the organization on time. So we are taking this person who is, at this point, somewhat of a drag on our movement toward the goal, trying to change their behavior to be an improvement to company behavior toward a goal, or organizational behavior toward a goal. So at this point here, they're not helping us. At this point, they're helping us achieve our goal on time. This would be even better. So we want to change the employee's performance. Now, theoretically, we could get out a long bullwhip. Have you ever played with a bullwhip? It's really an amazing instrument. I mean, you really can snap the end of the air through the, you know, doing it correctly. It does break the sound barrier at the end, as you might expect, and make that crack that you hear about every so often. But it takes a lot of practice to get it. So we don't just whip the employees with an available, which we keep in the bottom drawer of our desk, bullwhip, but instead we encourage them to change. And we do this by showing them what they need to do, what the associated rewards are with this, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, et cetera.
This summer I worked with KPMG and their performance appraisal at the end of the summer. Instead of going 1 to 5, they went 4 to 1. I was wondering if there's any logic.
No, there's no logic. It's whatever's convenient for them. I would say the higher numbers sound better, so I'd put them at the top. Did they have the other way around?
Yeah.
1 was the best?
Yeah, it was really weird.
It doesn't sound like the best.
Yeah.
Except maybe in a race where you finish first, I guess.
Yeah.
But it doesn't sound good. Higher numbers seem better to me.
Yeah.
But that's just me. I mean, would you rather drive... would you rather drive someplace at 1 mile an hour or at 30 miles an hour? It's obvious. Higher numbers are better, right? I think just, but it was sort of like this, or what was it, what it looked like?
Well, they didn't really have theirs laid out like that. They just had, so like 1 was integrity, for example. They had 4, you had no integrity, 3, so on. Basically like that. It was just listed.
So you're trying to get a lower number, effectively.
Yeah.
I assume you didn't get 4 on integrity, did you?
No, I got 1 on integrity.
Did you really?
Yeah.
There you go. Good man. But to me, actual, rather than say how a person did like that, it's, to me it's too vague. What I would like to see is an actual piece of behavior. You know, here's what you did that showed us that you were a very conscientious or ethical person or whatever. Do you see what I'm saying? So actual job performance vignettes, critical incidents in my terms, critical incidents have more impact because it shows the employee what they've done that they should replicate and improve if needed. Rather than say, your behavior was low here, and here's why we think it was low. Let me see if I can thumb through my notes and find an example. Yeah.
How, like, microscopic can this get? Can they pretty much be, like, put under, like, even small things be judged as appraisal?
If it's important, they should be judged. Now, there's a number of ways that, for example, a person could file an office budget. You know, they could file it by talking to people, or they could file it by just grabbing numbers out of all the possible ways of grabbing numbers, or they could combine them two, or whatever. So there's a number of ways of getting there which could be discussed. But the fact of the matter is the budget needed to be turned in on time and be useful and neat and this and that. At this point, I haven't talked about gathering the information, and that might be an important component of the performance appraisal if it was turning out to be not a good way of gathering data. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it needs to get as microscopic, and that's a good question because it would go on forever in that sense, but it needs to get adequately microscopic to look for things that could be a problem and that those could be changed. Okay, so this, with the behavioral anchored rating scales here, we see a picture and a number of what employees have done and what they should be doing. Then after this office budget gets done, we would go on and do another major responsibility, another major responsibility, another in the same fashion until we have completed their performance appraisal. Yeah?
If you get too specific, wouldn't it deter employees from, like, new innovative ways of getting things done?
Well, that's you know, an outstanding question. And the reason it's a good question, for example, was even that there was an NPR article on performance appraisal this morning on the radio. Interestingly enough, no, I didn't hear it, granted, but Jody told me all about it, at least her interpretation of it. And a lot of it was the fact that people find that they get bogged down in the details. The question is, do the details influence the performance of the job and therefore help or hinder goal achievement for the company? Is there a consistency there? Do you see what I mean? If they're bothering people because their fingernails are dirty, right, and it has nothing to do with the job, then there's no point. Okay? Or if they're performing the job wearing the wrong kind of tie or no tie or whatever, is there a reason for the detail? If there's a reason for the detail, then it should be emphasized. But if it's just some arbitrary BS control mechanism, then I would say no. So a person who's doing this needs to understand the details. They need to understand the possible details that go into this and go into the employee's overall behavior and determine what's useful and what's not. I had an employee that I haven't told you about yet when I was doing construction. I used to do additions and rehab houses and all that kind of stuff. I had an employee, the best employee I had. He was the best employee because he could work by himself. He'd been doing it for years. He was faster than greased lightning, and he did high-quality work, right, and I never had to bother with him. Now, his performance appraisal would be good by these standards. Here are the details that might upset people. He came in at 3 o'clock, and this is no joke. This is exactly the way Steve Dickinson worked, VI87355. I still remember his phone number because I used to always call him to help me out. I'm in a bind, Steve. Can you do it? So he'd come in 3 o'clock in the afternoon. In his car would be his tools and this and that, and a case, not a six pack, a case of beer. Right? They all got set down in the middle of where he was going to be working, and I'd go home. Steve would be there all night. That's the way he wanted to work. Nobody around. He could play the music he wanted to play. Nobody would hassle him to borrow his tools or any of this other kind of stuff. Always looked a wreck when he came in, and he always looked like an equal wreck, not a worse wreck, in the morning when I showed up. And guess where the case of beer was? Gone. Completely. 24 beers in an 8-hour period. I know. I cannot explain it. But certain people might take offense at this kind of behavior on the job. Not me. I wanted the output. And he did the output. in the morning, he'd be gone when I got there, and I'd look around to see what he'd done. It'd be perfect. Everything was perfect. Always. Now, if I was too detail-oriented, I might say, Steve, you're not showing up at the right time. We all start work at 8 o'clock. We don't bring a case of beer with us, et cetera, et cetera. But would he have continued to come to work? No. So I would have lost that employee. It was outstanding. Yeah.
And you used to do roofing? What did you used to do?
No, roofing. I hate roofing. I've done plenty of roofing, and I don't like it. I did just overhaul the houses, you know, remodeling and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Additions, that kind of crap. Yeah.
So shouldn't companies be, like, have a reasonable standard to accommodate employees for their own personal maximum output that they can do?
Don't you think? That's what this concept of job design is. Within job design, the idea of modifying a workplace to encourage an employee for them personally. Do they want a compressed work week? You talk about this in OB. Do they want to do job sharing with a friend, et cetera? Do they want to work, you know, compressed work week being 3 days a week, but they work 12 hours a day or 13 hours a day? Or do they want alternating days or whatever, right? The question is, if it works for the company, should they allow those kinds of freedom? And I'm all for it, 100%. It'd probably be better not to bring the beer because everybody would be stealing your beer and then they'd get wrecked and nothing would get done. Yeah.
I know it's like, with OSHA, that's for like factory jobs, but with his situation.
Actually, OSHA's for everybody,
okay,
but go ahead.
I mean, with that specifically, with him.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of specifics there. I should have been paying taxes. I should have been doing Social Security. I should have been doing withholding. I should have been doing all kinds of crap. But I didn't do any of it. They were all subcontractors, which is a gross lie because you can't subcontract. Actually, he could have been a subcontractor, but there's a list of, I think, 10 things that show that you're not using these employees. If you tell them when to be on the job is one of them. If you tell them what tools to bring, blah, 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 if you define things that they have to do, then they can't be subcontractors. It's an HR issue. But in this case, I would just sort of say, you know, here's what needs to be done. These cabinets look like crap. Make them look good, you know. That's about the extent of what I told them. And they look great. So, my point is here that as you do a performance appraisal, you should try, in many cases, to devoid yourself of judgments based on your own personal whims. I don't like visual tattoos, and you've got a big one. Could you please cover that up with a turtleneck or something, right? It's irrelevant to doing the job, right? Is the person doing the job? Is the person helping the company get to its goals, blah, blah. Was Steve helping me get to my goals? Oh, sure, shooting Fig Newton. He was. He was doing a fantastic job in his own extremely eccentric way, granted. Yeah. Dye your hair? What color?
They want it darker.
That's weird.
It was a what bakery?
It was bright, they thought it was too bright, and my hair was too brown.
Well, they didn't ask you to shave your head, did they? That's a positive there. But think that's kind of weird?
It was really weird.
You did not take the job? Shaving your head in a bakery would maybe make a little sense from a job point of view than, you know, people don't get their croissants with
it. Well, buddy, if you dyed your blonde hair brown, you'd probably find it easier in a cupcake.
It might be. It might. They just fall in there and nobody notices it. I don't really know. We're getting a little bit off track. But it's interesting to know that people are concerned about hair color at bakeries because of the lighting. Jesus.
Quick question with that. Like, kind of what she was saying, like, since this is like a right-to-work state, can they just, like, not hire you based on, I mean, like, even if you were hired and they told you to dye your hair, they could fire you?
Well, it gets into the discussion of mutable traits versus non-mutable traits. Can you make a decision on a person based on non-mutable traits? Non-mutable means non-changeable, right? And skin color, for example. They can't ask you to wear pancake makeup, white pancake makeup, when you come to work. Okay, because they're asking you to change a non-mutable trait. It can't be changed. Whereas they could ask, of course, but it would be illegal. But from the point of view of hair color, I think that would be construed to be mutable. In other words, it can be changed, and therefore probably not illegal.
Well,
I don't, I've never seen a case tried on it. Is it stupid? Sure.
The reasoning is that they wanted also to create a more environment that was more like Disney.
Disney?
Yeah, like super friendly and super...
And people with light hair can't be friendly?
There's
some inconsistency here to the sequence of logic.
Yeah.
It's falling apart rapidly. Did you have to wear a mouse ears or anything?
No.
No? Oh, well, that's one check.
Chick-fil-A won't hire homosexuals.
That's not true.
They came out with a statement.
The CEO just said that.
But do they know he's
gay?
Yeah.
Oh,
no, he's gay.
He's gay. Okay.
But,
no,
yeah, they know.
They definitely hire him.
Same as with Cracker Barrel. They had a huge lawsuit on this about hiring gays and not. So let me tell you a story, since these things always trigger stories. All the professors have a story about everything. Cracker Barrel was not hiring gays. Jody went ballistic. This is the stupidest thing. I don't care if the waitstaff's gay. On and on. Don't you ever go to Cracker Barrel, she's telling me this. Not that I'd ever go. But don't ever go. So Aaron and I were, this is when he's taking around the state to play, what did he play anyway? Tennis. I took him around to play tennis for like 5 years. I'd forgotten all about it. So one time we came back and I primed him. So Jody says, how'd it go? And Aaron says, well, I did great, this and that. And then we got to eat at Cracker Barrel. Flipped out. She was so angry.
Wait, so they don't hire homosexuals?
Supposedly. But it was great. It was a total, because Aaron did it so perfectly. Oh, it was great. I won my match, and Dad said because I won, we could go to Cracker Barrel. Oh, man. I'll never forget.
With private industry, that I know that they started changing that, but in private industry, they have the right to, like, not hire people.
Not to hire people what?
Some people. Right? But that
really?
Was like,
how about if some people happen to be people that I don't want to hire that are black? Just black people. I want to hire everybody else except black people. Or I want to hire everybody else except
they can, like,
women.
Side-skirt that for a while.
Huh?
They can side-skirt that issue for a while.
I'm going to say I don't believe that's true. Well, if they have 15 or more employees, they're going to be covered. And even under 15, it's going to be state. Huh? Well, then we had a law in 1964. And that's been so long ago that even I can barely remember. We weren't even married then. That's how long ago it was. That's a hell of a long time. I was just thinking about this and adding up. It made me feel old. Huh?
If you were black and you went to marry with a white girl.
Good point. And there's a whole, don't get me off on this, about the same-sex marriage. People are so upset, just like they were when a black woman and a white guy or vice versa wanted to get married. It's written, it's just the most amazing thing that people don't see those things as equated. It's exactly the same thing. It's a standard. People just don't think it should be. Well, 40 years ago, they didn't think a white and a black should get married. And who cares now? Do whatever you want. I don't care. And when we bought our house in Blacksburg, it was right in the contract for buying the house, right? This house cannot be sold to a black person. It's in the contract. But that was from 1949, and just this is, you get all these documents going back to the beginning when the house was built. Obviously, that's been changed. But in 1949, people didn't think that black people should live in the house next to them. Whatever. So, thank you, man. I feel much better now. So what we're talking about here, then, is doing performance appraisals based on important, not overly specific and not job-related details. You're the one that got me started on this, now that I can think of it. Okay.
You always ask good questions.
Almost all questions are good. One final note. My parents had this incredible house in Philadelphia designed by this famous architect. Beautiful place. Huge, beautiful place. One level, California style. Cool as hell. Right? So they moved out, and everybody else that moved into it couldn't afford it, basically. Couldn't keep it up. And then Jody and I went back to look at it like 30 years later, and the place was completely, almost a wreck. They're about to bulldoze the place. When who bought it and saved it? No, not me. It would have been too much work.
Black person.
Close. Oh. Next thing we were talking about.
Oh.
I call them a gay couple. A gay couple got caught. So Jody and I are walking down the lane. I hope I'm not getting too stereotypical, but it was so great. We're walking down the lane. It's like a huge, long lane that comes down. It's just a beautiful setting. There's the house. And we're walking down. We didn't know that these guys had bought the house. We're walking down the lane, and here comes the new owner. And he's walking. He has a little white poodle that he's leading, and it's got a pink leash. And he's walking the poodle along, just like a stereotyping of the picture. And I look at Jody and I say, a gay couple bought the house. I was so happy. And, of course, we get down there. They'd already spent over $300,000 on rehabbing the house. And they were putting it back to perfect original design, everything. So he talked to me for half an hour about how things were. Were those lights here? What kind of switches did it have there? And on and on and on. Perfect. To the point where they wanted to rip down my dad's art studio, which he had added on later at a substantial cost, had this big addition put on for him to do his artwork in. And the architect, Neutra, hated the addition because he hadn't done it. So here's this Neutra house, right, that these guys wanted to restore to its original condition and were seriously thinking of tearing down the studio. I couldn't believe it. Which included the garage, I might add, right? That's how serious they were about redoing this. As far as I know, they've redone it completely.
Part of Philadelphia, was it?
If you take a Google map, it's really great. You can take an aerial view of Philadelphia, and you don't even have to go down any. You can just look down and see where the place is, because it was my grandparents and my parents. So it's like a huge piece of property with a big circular driveway on it. So it's easy to see from, you know, 10,000 feet up or whatever. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say on average homosexual couples, they say that they make more money in the
better incomes. Yep, supposedly true, and they have certainly, stereotypically at least, have good architectural tastes and design tastes. But when I saw them come up in the driveway, I was so happy. Because the house had been almost abandoned. All right, so this is where we are. We got onto this through details, right? The idea of how detailed this should be. My answer to that is it should be detailed enough to get the job done to help the company achieve the goal. That's it. So those details are extremely important if they relate to goal achievement. And mostly gender, color, all that stuff has no bearing on performance appraisal. So hopefully you won't do that. There's tons of biases inherent here. Many possible biases inherent, as you can see. And it takes somebody who's being careful about how to do performance appraisal to not bring those biases in. Can a woman drive a forklift, or does it need to be somebody with a beard belly, suspenders, smoking a cigar? I guess that could be a woman, too. But should it be does it need to be a guy?
No,
right? Except, but it would stereotypically would be seen that way. Oh, you can't be driving very well. You're a woman, blah, blah. Okay. So when it comes to performance appraisal, then, we're working toward our goals. Now, finally, how are these performance appraisals used to help us achieve our goals? Aside from the actual doing the job better, we want to attach rewards for high performers. You know, you'll hear the phrase, we want to treat everybody the same. And this is diametrically opposed, which means opposite, directly opposite of the way you should be thinking. When you're thinking about achieving a goals, are you going to reward certain employees more or less than other employees?
Yeah.
What happens if you reward all of them the same? Everybody gets a $10 increase. What's going to happen?
Common rule.
It's going to be common rule in terms of purchasing power, perhaps, but what's going to happen in terms of behavior?
Isn't that kind of a flaw with an hourly wage? Some people can look like they're working really hard but not doing anything while the other people actually work.
Oh, that's definitely true, and a lot of people, there's been tons of research on the fact that people get raises and whatnot based on how well they schmooze with other people, just stand around and bullshit, right? You'll find that out.
Well, that's a lot of skill.
But that's not quite where I'm at. We have a high-performing employee, a low-performing employee, and we give them both X dollars increase.
It gets rid of the incentive for someone to do the job right.
Not only does it get rid of the incentive, it creates a disincentive to do high performance. So it creates an incentive to do nothing. Well, Charlie got the same raise as I did, and as far as I know, he spends most of his time examining the inner formation of his belly button with a Q-tip, right? Well, you know, what the hell? If that's what Charlie gets his money for, what am I going to be doing? Bringing in the Q-tips like everybody else that gets a reward, right? So this idea that we treat employees the same is a complete misnomer. Don't even think about it. Yes, I know we're America and everybody has a fair shot at the gold ring. Not at my place, they don't. The people
right.
that have a shot at the gold ring are the people who perform to help us achieve our goals, not the people who sit on the sidelines playing canasta. Yeah?
We were talking about, like, how the goal of the
They stop trying. So what we're talking about here is you had it in OB. It's Adam's equity theory. You mentioned Adam. Adam's equity theory. He's the founder of the concept. And we're looking at you, looking at how much effort you put into a job and what you get out of a job compared to what's known as the, quote, relevant other who's over here who's getting stuff out and putting stuff in too. And if you see they're putting absolutely nothing in terms of work or being on time or whatever in, and they're getting the same outputs as you, then you see that you're going to change your behavior. And you're going to change your behavior so that you get the same rewards but with less effort. That part of the research hasn't been confirmed. But the other part of it is, I see people who are doing well, so I try to do well so I can get a reward. The reverse of that hasn't really statistically been shown. Yeah?
Isn't this like one of the big criticisms of unions?
Well, until you look at what the research shows. The research shows that unionized workplaces have less work problems, higher output, less problems with equipment, et cetera, et cetera. So what you're getting here, and you get the same thing in politics too, is you get the group with the largest amount of money tries to convince you that their way of seeing it is right. So the company that has the tons of money wants to convince you that unions are dysfunctional. So they say, unions are dysfunctional, and oh, by the way, unions are dysfunctional. And you say, God, I keep hearing that unions are dysfunctional. I guess they are. The reality is that unionized companies do better on many, many measures. And one or two that are slightly less than break even, but not many. By and large, they do, the company does much better being unionized, frankly. Sorry. But that's, I'm telling you what the research shows. Personal experience could be any way you want. But if it's personal experience is negative, it's because the union is not being run correctly and the employees are not being controlled correctly, just like bad management. Yeah.
Doesn't that have like also a negative effect? Can't unions drive companies to move elsewhere? That's why
Pennsylvania.
Maybe they just went to the South.
They don't drive them. The company chooses to relocate to Mexico because they want the money, right? So then they get down to Mexico and guess what? They don't know what they're doing down there. They have to go through a whole learning period. Then the products start coming out, and the products look like lollipops when they're supposed to be fountain pens. Well, there's an issue there, you know. So after about 15 years of trying to deal with this, they say, bag it, we're moving back to Pennsylvania. And they get up and move back. A lot of the Mercadillo Dorian factories have moved back.
To Pennsylvania specifically?
No, I just picked
the
name.
Pennsylvania,
I just picked the long name out of my – I was raised in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Don't be knee-jerk action, negative or positive, about anything. Think, and do the research. And if you do the research on the impact of unionization on whatever the business you're in, see what the research shows. Research has been done on all of this. I just have to be quoting lines out of the airline industry because it's what came to mind. But really, unionization is a good thing. Having been a union member for years and years and years and years as a carpenter, I'm telling you, it's a good thing. Yes, they had some stupid rules. You couldn't bring your own 4-foot level in, blah, blah. But in general, they were very protective and good at training and stuff. I thought it was a good thing. I still think it's a good thing. What happened to you with unions?
What?
Oh, no, I'm talking about my husband. My husband worked at the company that had unions.
Mm-hmm.
Because he saw all the problems from all the members, he complained about all the problems, you know, constantly complaining about the way that they do business.
But were those complaints justified or not?
Oh, yeah. It ended up hurting the employees in the long run.
But if the company had changed, the way the union might have wanted them to change, what would have happened?
All the things that they unionized implement seems to be more bothersome than benefiting the employees. Coming from what
Working
he
senior.
Said and his fellow coworkers would say.
That they were more bothersome than helpful?
Yeah. Like nitpicky stuff.
I mean, I think
really
at some point.
Unions should concentrate on bread and butter issues. Money, benefits,
yes.
Time off.
They
That's all they can concentrate on.
They got paid a lot less
they,
because of the union.
They should just concentrate on those things. That's it.
Is it because of things
and showing the value of these things.
Why, is it because of things they wanted to happen within the workplace?
It might have been a reaction of the company towards the union. If they had a negative view of the union, they might have.
If they had it, we can be sure they do.
I mean, that happened in Pittsburgh really badly, like a lot of protests and things like that. They just moved over to Japan and other countries because it's cheaper.
Well, not in Japan anymore. It's more expensive
yeah,
in Japan, but I hear you.
And the reason I asked that question, though, is my father works for UPS, and he said that after working there for, you know, 2 months or whatever, he realized that most of the guys would just stand around. They do the minimal amount of work because they know that the company's not going to fire them because it's, like, harder, you know, through the union and everything like that.
Yeah.
But this is not a union issue. This is a company issue. If you had, let's say you don't know whether a company is unionized or not, is it normal to have a company with employees standing around? Would you want to change that? Yes, right? Can you say that the union wants employees to stand around and do nothing? No. So what we have here is a typical response by management. Management says, I have to hire you because you're a minority, right? I don't want to get involved because they don't understand how things need to be done. Unions are only interested in generating a healthy workplace so that employees can give them more dues. Basically, that's what it's coming down to. They don't want employees to stand around doing nothing. Why? Because it's not cost effective for the company. The company gets hurt and they can't spend money on new trucks or whatever. So my point is that there's poor management everywhere. Be it in the unions or in the companies or whatever, but employees standing around doing nothing need to have their job descriptions and jobs changed to where they don't just stand around. My father ran a company, a printing company. They had these huge, massive printing machines, right? And they would stand. The union members would stand there if the trash basket got full. Why? Because there was no room to put the trash anymore. Why don't they empty the trash? Because it's not their job, right? There's a person who's supposed to come around and empty the trash cans. So this big freaking machine is standing there idling, waiting for something to happen, right, while the trash can remains full. Is that good management? No. Would the union really require that? No. It's a question of the unions realizing they have to survive in this day and age. Does UPS have competition? Yeah. They have some, and it's getting more so. If Amazon opens up their own delivery service, the shit's going to hit the fan for UPS.
Well, what do they do, though, when it's just kind of more down to an individual thing? They're like, well, I don't need to do it. I mean, from what I'm hearing, it sounds like you're saying they should care for the whole company's survival.
Right, so they get the union representative in, and they talk to the union representative about the machines not running because the trash cans are full. How can we stop this from happening? Union representative says, hire a trash can emptier. You say, okay.
Is UPS really big because, like, they have contracts with big companies?
Sure.
Because, like,
they're also very efficient.
Well,
yeah.
USPS is half as much
way
as
more
the delivers in the same amount of
time. I tend to agree with you. Plus, I think the UPS guys are a little bit harder on the packages.
Yeah.
You know, they all think they're pro football quarterbacks. And so if they have a package that's roughly the right size and your house is sort of in a line with the window out the door,
but that's just
they're nice
the thing.
Guys.
I don't understand why UPS is so big because it's so expensive.
Well, the postal service stuff goes on the UPS plane. They use UPS.
Do they really?
Yeah.
Postal service.
But there is a rumor about Amazon starting their own delivery service.
They're supposed to use drones too, right?
That won't work.
Oh yeah, I heard
about that.
Try outside, steal the drone, or shoot it down, or get it somehow. I mean, why would you just sit down and watch it off?
I want that package. Bam.
People
I got it. It's a present from heaven. God gave it to me.
That's like in bigger cities, when Jordans get delivered.
Yeah, yeah.
People freak out about Jordans. Like, there was outside the Bruins game, and they won, and people saw a Jordan that some dude was just videotaping the crowd with, and they started yelling it was a police Jordan and throwing shit at him and trying to knock it down.
That's awesome.
The rationale of the human being is beyond comprehension. The more there are, the bigger the group, the more likely a lynch mob. All right, let's go. I'll see you next time we're here. Sorry about all the side notes, but...